Matthew 19, verse 14 through 15. Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me, and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." When he had placed his hands on them, he went on from there.
I think he said that with a little pride, didn't he? Little kids inherit the kingdom of God. I know what you're up to, Elias. Good job, buddy. So, some of you kids might be freaking out right now. Some of the little kids. You might be looking around and you're thinking, what is going on? There is no sunshine hour. First they take Chick-fil-A away from us on Sunday, and now sunshine hour. What are we supposed to do? We wanted to change this a little bit, and so I wanted to talk to some of you all as well as some of the adults. So you're doing a great job listening. As a little reward, I'm going to show you two clips from my favorite all-time Disney Pixar movie. Some of you are going to judge me. Don't judge me. This is church. But it is my favorite, and we're going to show the first one right here and now.
Hey!
You were talking to a rock. Hey, that one looks like a turtle. Look at that one! That one looks like a dog. Ah! It is a dog.
What?
We're not allowed to have dogs in my apartment. Hey, I like dogs.
We have your dog!
Whoa.
Whatever he belongs to.
Sit, boy. Hey, look, he's trained. Shake. Uh-huh. Speak.
Hi there.
Did that dog just say hi there?
Oh, yes.
What?
My name is Doug. I have just met you, and I love you. My master made me this collar. He is a good and smart master, and he made me this collar so that I may talk. Squirrel! My master is good and smart.
Is that possible?
Oh, it is, because my master is smart.
Cool. What are these, you boy?
Hey, would you clear that cradle contigo? I use that collar. Watashiwa Hanashima. You talk with me. I would be happy if you stopped.
Russell, don't touch that. It could be radioactive or something.
I am a great tracker. My pack sent me on a special mission all by myself. Have you seen a bird? I want to find one, and I've been on this scent. I am a great tracker. Did I mention that? Hey, that is the bird. I have never seen one up close, but this is the bird. May I take your bird back to camp as my prisoner?
Yes, yes, take it. And on the way, learn how to bark like a real dog.
I can bark. And here's howling.
Can we keep him, please, please, please?
No.
What is the talking dog?
It's just a weird kick or something. Let's get to the falls.
Please be my prisoner. Oh, please be my prisoner.
I still think that Doug is the greatest Disney character of all time. It's not even up for debate in my head. So, something that happens on this journey, I'm going to come back to that video, but when my two older girls, they're now 17 and 12, but when I was given the amazing gift of becoming their dad, Addison, who's now 12, she was about 6 or 7 at the time. And one of the things that I really wanted to introduce them to is new foods, which is really hard to do with a kid, right? They all love chicken nuggets and fries. You can, you know, if you really want to spice it up, you can give them a corn dog or something. But just keep it a chicken and fries and we're all going to be happy, right? So I wanted to introduce them to a food that I grew up absolutely loving. Maybe you love it too. I love me some deep fried frog legs. I think they're fantastic. Now, when I told my two girls this, they immediately like, ooh, no, that's gross. I said, have you ever had them? They said, no. And I said, okay, well, you have to have them to know that. Like, we don't have to. Frogs are gross. Their legs must be gross too. So I thought, what is a way that I could get them to try this and enjoy it? And this be something that we can share together, this experience. And I came to this epiphany. Feel free to correct me correct me if I'm wrong on this, but is it just me or do women love miniature versions of foods? Why eat a whole cheeseburger when you can eat 4 mini cheeseburgers? It's more calories, but you feel thinner when you eat them, right? So, I decided to disguise this food. I fried them up. They looked a lot like those. And I said, girls, guess what I made for dinner tonight? Mini chicken legs. They're going to be great. You're going to love them. You're going to feel thinner if you eat them, too, because they're mini. They're smaller. And my oldest, Audrey, she's kind of funny about meats. If she's really, like, skeptical about eating new meats in general. Audrey's a lot more, I mean, Addison's a lot more open to it. And so I put like four, five, six different frog legs on there. And Audrey just kind of stares at them. She eats everything but the frog legs. She still's like, there's something going on here. Now Addison, who's six or seven, she hears mini chicken legs. She's like, why would my dad ever lie to me? He's not that cruel, even though I was. And she decides to try them. She likes them. She devours them. She asks for seconds and eats those too. Audrey still hasn't tried them. I said, look, Audrey, you need to at least give them a try. If you don't like them, you don't have to eat them. So she took one bite. She had already predetermined that she hated them. You guys know what I'm talking about, where a kid decides they hate something before they try it? That happened. So, like, right as her teeth hit the meat, she just started, like, squirming like it was terrible. And I said, girls, I've got a surprise for you. And Audrey goes, they're frog legs, aren't they? And I said, yes, indeed, they are frog legs. And Addison, who's just eaten seven of them to the bone, says, ooh, these are gross. I hate them. They're terrible. Immediately, the cat was a little out of the bag, right? Whenever we come and encounter a giant multicolored bird or a talking dog or mini chicken legs, we tend to think this doesn't make sense. It's not right. We're unfamiliar with it, so it must be wrong. It must be scary. We need to stay away from it. But the way that we become accustomed to this is when we have these different shared experiences and we go on these journeys together. Up is a movie that I love so much for a variety of reasons, but the story, in a nutshell, is an elderly man and a young little boy who end up accidentally on this adventure together in South America. And they have all these shared experiences and they become very close friends because of those shared, of that shared journey that they went on together, right? So, something that happens with us, one of the ways that we come close to people, that we learn so much from one another, is shared experiences and shared journeys. You chose this, if you're married, you chose the spouse that you chose because you want to share life and that journey of life with other people. We learn when we walk alongside other people. Now there's an incredible story that that shares just what this looks like in Scripture and real, true teaching from Jesus. If you want to look it up, I'm going to paraphrase it, but if you want to look it up, it's in Luke 24. Here's what's happened leading up to this. Jesus has come. He's lived this incredible, perfect life, talking about how he is going to redeem the world. Then he is arrested. He is crucified. And then actually the day that this takes place is when the rumor starts spreading, this Jesus who was crucified 3 days ago, he's come back to life. Well, during this, there's two men walking on this road that leads to the city of Emmaus. While they're on this road, they're talking about what happens, and Jesus appears behind them. He starts walking up behind them, and these two men, for whatever reason, we don't know why, but they are talking about this, and they don't recognize Jesus. Now, the way the Scripture talks about it describes it, they probably actually followed him for a while, so they should have a good idea, but for whatever reason, they didn't know it was him. Jesus walks up, and he says, so what are you two guys discussing? And they said, well, if you're coming from Jerusalem, which that's where this road comes from, you must be the only one in town who didn't hear about this. So there's a rumor going around that this Jesus person who could perform all these miraculous signs and heal the blind and make the blind to see, he made the lame to walk, and there was, and we watched these incredible things, he had these unbelievable teachings that he gave too, and then he was arrested and killed, and we thought his movement was over. But now we're hearing rumors from his apostles who are saying he's back, he's risen from the dead, and none of it makes sense. One, how's it possible to come back from the dead? But even if this is true, like what does this mean? Because he was supposed to be someone of Jewish descent. Like this doesn't fit into our story. And Jesus says, well, you clearly need to go back and look at the prophets. You need to go back and look at the Old Testament, look at the law. And they then walk down this road for several miles. When you walk down a road for several miles, it takes you a while, right? Now, we have some incredible teaching from Jesus. If you look at Matthew 5, there's the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5 through 7. It just turns the world, still to this day, still turns the world upside down. But the road to Emmaus is a special teaching because it took a journey in a small group of individuals to simply sit and discuss what God has done in the world through Jesus Christ. At the end of this, they said, why don't you stay with us? We want to have dinner with you. He sits down with them to have dinner, and it's at that point, whatever, the like invisible wall or whatever, it went down. They realize, oh my goodness, it's Jesus. Jesus is then taken from them because he has other people to reveal himself to at that point. But the point behind it is that he walked alongside these two people on this road. And from there on, guess what they went and did? They went and shared the resurrected Messiah. Not only that, it wasn't just, hey, this guy who was dead, he came back to life. It was, he came back to life, and here's why. Here's the scripture that talks about it. Here's the story that we felt was incomplete, that we keep waiting to happen for the world to be redeemed through this Messiah. It was him, and here's why. They can now give a teaching that not even the apostles could give, because Jesus chose to walk alongside these people. Is that so different from what teachers do today? While there might be, regardless of what level you're coming from of education, whether it be preschool or kindergarten or up to college, graduate, doctoral studies, the people, the teachers who had the biggest impact on our life, it wasn't because they shared the most valuable information. That was helpful. But the people, the teachers whom I remember in my life were the people who, were the teachers who said, hey, Casey, it seems like you don't fully understand this. Stick around for class. Stick around after class. I'm going to talk with you for about 15 minutes. We're going to make sure we have this together. It was teachers who, after school, when I was having a basketball game in junior high, they decided, instead of going home to be with their family, they decided to come to the game to cheer me on. It's those kinds of teachers. And those teachers have a lasting effect, whether it's your kindergarten teacher or it's one of your doctoral teachers. If you spend time sharing life with them, then they have such a deeper and more profound impact than just the information that they share. Now, here's what I love about UP. UP profiles and puts into light one of the lost relationships of our culture and society today, and that is that between the elderly and the young children. Because a whole lot of things have happened, a whole lot of things have shifted in our culture, right? Because when other people were growing up, these things didn't exist, did they? And here's a telltale sign of Gen Z, which is everyone ages, right now it's 8 to 24. Gen Zs can operate 5 different screens at once and not miss a beat. It's a very regular thing for them. Whereas there are others who they see these things and they run. There are also others who see this and they're like, oh man, my phone has a clock. That is awesome. And because of that, we look at these gaps where young people rely on technology and others might try to run from it at times. There's a new app for everything and we think we don't have this connection. This relationship must be mended in our world and especially in our church. It has to. And it's for a number of reasons. I'm going to get to them, but here's what's fascinating. The Fuller Youth Institute, one of the number one institutes, you've been coming to my class on Sunday, I quote this stat pretty much every week. The Fuller Youth Institute noticed that a whole lot of kids who are growing up in church, as soon as they graduate, they leave the church. And they said, we want to fix this. So they started polling kids. They polled kids who grew up and then left. But then, after that, they found a variety of things, and so they're trying to find a consistency in the statistics. Here's the stat they found that was consistent. They polled the kids who grew up in the church and stayed in the church. Maybe went off to college, but still found a church family to plug into there. They said of all the kids who stuck around, 90%, 9 out of 10, could point to a minimum of 5 adults who were influential in their faith. I'll do the math for you real quick. Parent number 1, parent number 2, that's assuming both parents are actively involved in their child's life. Let's assume they go to a church that has a youth minister. Let's go ahead and assume they go to a church that has a children's minister. Very few kids can say they have all 4 of these as influences. That still doesn't hit the 5. And in addition to that, it's a minimum of 5. Okay, they said a lot of these people could mention 10, 11, and 12 adults who were very, very valuable. And what's fascinating, it doesn't say adults who were tech savvy. It doesn't say adults who knew how to play video games. It doesn't say adults who had a really cool instant queue on their Netflix account. It says adults who are simply pouring into these kids' lives. That could have been in the form of teaching. It could have been in the form of just loving on who these kids were. And how important that was, they chose to walk alongside them. So, if you have children, if you have grandchildren, you're probably asking yourself, I wonder, who are the 5 or more for my kid. But see, that question doesn't apply to everyone here. And so what I'd like to do is actually spin this around instead and ask this. Who are you one of the 5 4? Because asking who our 5 kids are, for who the 5 people for our kid, hey, what's up? How you doing? Asking that isn't going to solve the problem. But if we all start asking, who can I be one of the 5 4, that problem will be solved very, very quickly here in this church. And again, it doesn't take anything profound. It doesn't take this special skill in one way or another. But I do want to pick on a few people here in this audience right now. Get ready. It might be you. I didn't warn anybody before I said this. So, but there are people in this church who make it a point to do that. And I tried to pick people who are not teachers by trade. I might have done that on accident. I wasn't trying to if I did. But one person that always happens, something that happens in my family, every Wednesday, we have Bible study here at 7 p.m., and every Wednesday, we'll pick up my 2 younger kids, and we'll pick them up from daycare. We will then go to the Lord's restaurant, Chick-fil-A. And we will go there, and my son loves Wednesdays. He is a big, big fan of them. So I'll pick him up from school every day, and I'll say, Gatlin, what are we going to do? He goes, we're going to Chick-fil-A. I was like, okay, yeah, that's, okay, fine. What are we doing after that? That's what I care about. He said, we're going to Bible class. I'm thinking, that's what I want to hear. But here's what's incredible. See, he knows a lot of faces here. There's very few names that he's 4, so he's still getting names down. There is a select number of names he knows, but there is one person who he always knows who teaches his Bible class. I said, Gatlin, who's going to teach your Bible class? Dorothy Johnson's name comes up every single time. Miss Dorothy. Miss Dorothy's going to teach my class. I love Miss Dorothy. And I got to tell you, some of the stuff that Dorothy's come up with in her class, she created like this paper mache whale thing so kids could pretend to be in the belly of the fish. It was awesome. But I can tell you, as cool as that was, I don't think Gatlin's going to remember that 8 years from now. But I think he is going to remember Dorothy and how much she cared about him and loved him, and how much Miss Tiffany also came and also loved him and also took him under her wing. And I am forever grateful to Dorothy and people like her who pour into my children. Maybe you can identify a little more with one of our staff members here at church. I always know when Derek, Theodore, and Cohen Wheeler come into our church. You know why? It's not because they're loud, rambunctious boys. They're really not that loud. But I know they're coming in because every Tuesday morning around 9:30, I hear Terry Weaver start squealing. Hey, boys! And I immediately know the Weaver boys are here. Because around 9:30 on Tuesday mornings, it is a party in our office with all these little kids because Terry pulls them all in and then Miss Twyla starts loving them too. And all these kids who come in, they know who Miss Terry is. And again, Miss Terry is not someone who has this profound, super doctoral, theological, chosen way over everybody else by God gift. She simply chooses to love these kids. There's nothing special or unique about it. She chose to make herself someone who is going to be available to young children. And maybe you think, you know, young kids, they're a little overwhelming, they're a little exhausting. I get that. They have those days. My own kids have those days, absolutely. So maybe you think, I'd love to pour into still people who are a little more under control, their minds are still being formed. Now, if I were to then ask a lot of the young adults who are here in our church, who is someone here who still is super formative to you and your spiritual formation? Without fail, 100% of the time, if I asked them right now, they would all say the same 2 people. Dan and Mary Huber are going to come up at some point in the conversation, probably first. And I'll tell you about them, watching them. They don't have some special, unique, they're better at connecting with young adults than everybody else. They choose to love these people. I've heard so many stories from them taking people in our ministry out to their house, for them teaching them a special life skill that they might still be developing. And Mary and Dan can go on for hours upon hours talking about all the different people who've come through our church as young adults or as college students. If you are a young adult or a college student and you do not know them, you are missing out. These people are tremendous. And I could go on for hours talking about more. Those four are not the only four. Okay? Those are not the only ones who are making a big impact for the kingdom with younger people. But there are so many more beyond that. So I want to ask this. Something that I hear, that you'll hear from teachers, something that's a cliche saying from teachers is, I'm not really teaching them, they're teaching me. And so I want to ask this question. Who are you learning from? There are kids. All these are kids from our church family. Are you learning from any of them? And if so, who? Here's why I ask this question. Elias read this before I got up here. This is Matthew 19, starting in verse 13. One day some parents brought their children to Jesus so he could lay his hands on them and pray for them. But the disciples scolded the parents for bothering him. But Jesus said, let the children come to me. Don't stop them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to those who are like these children. And he placed his hands on their heads and blessed them before he left. Now, in 1 Timothy 5 and in Titus 2, Paul gives special instruction to Timothy and to Titus on how to teach elderly men and women. Most scholars think that Timothy was probably somewhere between the age of 15 and 25, a teenager or a young adult. Titus is probably something fairly similar. And so I find this profound that Paul's giving this instruction of, I am empowering younger people to teach those who are so much wiser than them, because we're teaching the gospel. And even more so, Jesus had a tendency with his teachings to take what we know in our culture and to flip it upside down. And if that's the case, in our culture that says the elderly are the wise ones and no one else is wise amongst them, what if we actually took that and flipped it upside down? Not to say that the elderly are not wise, but what if we decided to not just listen to the elderly? We should still listen to them, but not just the elderly, but also what if, since the kingdom of heaven belongs to children, wouldn't it make sense to start asking them how to get into that kingdom? Wouldn't that make sense to see what they see the gospel of Jesus as? And perhaps it's time that we start empowering younger people to play a more prominent role in our church and in our faith. Which brings me to this next question. Where do you see this church in 25 years? And I need to add a couple things to this question. First of all, you might be looking at this thinking, look, I'm in school right now, and once I graduate high school, I'm out of here. I'm not going to go here anymore. Some of you might be thinking, well, I'm at UTSA, or I'm in med school, and once I graduate, I'm out of here. So I ain't going to be here in 25 years. Some of you might be, well, we're in the military, and we're going to get restationed here in the next 3 to 5 years. And some of you might be thinking, look, I'm later on in life. I don't know that I'll be here 25 years from now. I think God's probably going to call my name. He's going to call me home. And I got to tell you, the question still remains, because what we do now here in the present is going to echo in this church for years and years to come. It is so, so important that we pour into these younger generations so that when our time has come, or when it is our time to leave here, that we can look at this church and say we are leaving it in some very, very capable and powerful hands in so many different ways and on so many different levels. You see, when we pour into young people, good things happen. And if nothing else, we have a relationship that we can point to. I promised there'd be two videos. So here's the other one. This is what's really cool. They experienced this adventure, and Russell had mentioned that his dad wasn't a part of his life. And so one of the reasons that he got involved with Mr. Fredrickson was because he wanted to finish his Wilderness Explorer badges. And the only badge left he needed was to get a Assisting the Elderly badge. That's the only reason he showed up at Mr. Fredrickson's house. He didn't even know who the guy was. He just showed up and he was like, can I help you cross the street? Can I help you cross your lawn? Can I help you cross your porch? Can I help you cross something so I can get this badge? And so at the end of this adventure, he finally is allowed to earn this badge. But again, Dad's not here, and that's who always helped him with this. Let's watch this next video.
Getting their badges, the following explorers will graduate to senior explorers. For extreme mountaineering lore, congratulations, Jimmy. For wild animal defensive arts, congratulations, Brandon. For assisting the elderly,
Russell, is there someone that,
Excuse me.
Pardon me. Old man coming through. I'm here for him.
Congratulations, Russell. Sir?
Russell, for assisting the elderly and for performing above and beyond the call of duty, I would like to award you the highest honor I can bestow, the Ellie Badge.
Covers everybody. So let's give a big explorer call to our brand new senior wilderness explorers. Ready, everybody?
So something that tends to happen and will occur in these types of relationships is a teaching effect. They both learn something from this relationship. Now, in Ephesians 4 and in 1 Corinthians 12, Paul writes to two different churches and talks to them about the spiritual gifts that each person can contribute to the church. They have gifts on a variety of levels and in a number of ways. And what's fascinating about these is that of all the gifts that are listed in both 1 Corinthians and in Ephesians, there are three that are listed in both. Apostles, prophets, teachers. Of all the spiritual gifts that we could have, teachers is one that is considered to be universal in the kingdom of God. Whether it be teaching down there, teaching in our schools, or simply a one-on-one mentor relationship, teaching gets a special shout out. Here's how profound and how important that relationship can be. Maybe you saw this story that just came up over this past week. 3 weeks ago, a man by the name of Chris Barrington was found wandering up and down the highways of Waco, Texas. Some policemen heard that there was a man that was wandering up and down the highways, looked like he was really, really lost, didn't know where he was going. They stop, they find him, and they start talking to him. Pretty quickly, they realize that Chris, a 30-year-old man, was special needs and had the mental capacity of a 6-year-old. And so after talking to him, they said, okay, how did you get here? Is there someone we can call to help you? Is there a place we could take you to help you out? They didn't know any of his backstory, and he was so confused that he couldn't explain it to them. They said, so who can we call? There's someone we can contact. And he said, yeah, Mr. Gerard. And after asking and prodding a little bit, they discovered Miss Gerard was Chris's teacher back when he was in middle school. And so they eventually get in touch with Michelle Gerard. They said, do you know this young man by the name of Chris Barrington? He's special needs. He said he was in your class. She said, yeah, I haven't heard from Chris in over a decade. What's going on? Is he okay? And they said, well, we found him wandering the highways, and he only knew to give us your name. Is there a way you can come pick him up or help him? We want to help him however we can. She said, yeah, they go and take him in. Here's the backstory with Chris. Chris only lived with his father, who had been suffering with leukemia. One day, his father's health had gotten so bad that Chris decided, I need to help my dad, so he left his home. He wandered off so far that he got lost. He didn't know where to go. So he just starts wandering up and down these streets. His father's in such bad health, he doesn't even know that Chris left. So he's wandering around. Now, his father was in such bad health, and the household had such a low income that Chris had never had a birthday party for himself before. He had never experienced Thanksgiving dinner, and he did not know what Christmas was. He had never experienced any of those things. So, after discovering that a week before he was found, he had celebrated his 30th birthday, Michelle Gerard decided, you know what? We're going to throw him a surprise birthday party. That's where this picture was taken, at his first ever surprise birthday party, where afterwards he went on his first ever boat ride. And he was surrounded by family. He got his first ever birthday gifts. And she says at Thanksgiving, he's going to have his first ever turkey dinner. And at Christmas, he's going to experience Christmas. And hey, with the mental capacity of a six-year-old, he's going to experience Santa for the first time. How cool is that? Now, the story gets a little sad and a little happier at the end of it, because just this past week, Chris's father finally succumbed to leukemia and passed away. And who would apply for custodial rights and protective guardianship of Chris Barrington than Michelle Gerard? Brings me to this final question. If you don't get anything else, I hope you ask yourself this question, assuming you can read it. Who are you walking with? Who are you walking alongside? Perhaps you are not a teacher, not everyone is, but some of the people I learned from the most are not teachers by trade. For me, it's a woman by the name of Henrietta Vaughn. We couldn't say her name when we were little, so we called her Meta. And Meta's a Southern belle who still lives in Nashville. She calls everyone darling. Hello, darling. How you doing? Meta's a real sweet lady. And Meta realized that all my grandparents were dead before I was 7. And I never really had grandparents and a grandparent relationship. And so she decided she was going to be that for me. I now know what it's like for a grandparent to love me. I never had that growing up. And someone who showed me and shared with me what Jesus' love looks like despite differences and age gaps and opinions that might change. So perhaps you can look. After the lesson, we're going to sing a song, and then we're going to have all the students who are starting school, all the teachers, all the administrators, all support staff. We're going to ask all of you to come up here. Hopefully, there's a lot of you. We had a ton on first service. Y'all got a big number to beat. We got a little gift that we want you to take into your schools, and we're going to pray over you. But I hope you see, teachers, that you have a special gift and opportunity to walk alongside people as they are learning about not just school things, but life. And hopefully you're able to share the gospel, because right now our American culture has taught us that Jesus died so that we can be good people and good people go to heaven. I got news for you. That's not the gospel. The gospel is that Jesus Christ, that God took the form of a human being, decided to live the perfect life that none of us ever could, and then gave up that life so that we can inherit that life and have a life with God now and after this physical life is over. The gospel is not about being good. The gospel is about Jesus Christ. It is our job to teach people that story. It's our job to live in that story and invite people to enter into it. Perhaps you might feel all alone right now. Perhaps you're someone who says, I have no one walking alongside me and I need that help. There's going to be people in the back and down front. We call them our shepherds. Their wives are going to be there with them as well. They're there to pray for you, to put their arms around you, and we're going to help you in whatever way we can. So if that way can help, if we can add you that, if we can give you meaning to this story, this gospel that you're wondering about, please feel free to come down front or go to the back as we stand and sing this next song.